This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices. You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
Sierra has all the best active and outdoor brands you need, from athletic stuff, like a full-court pickup game, swish, to athletic-ish stuff, like a half-mile stroll. Get those steps in! And for morning hikes up the mountain trail, good pace, to nighttime ghost stories from the camping chair. What a twist. Whatever level of active, Sierra loves it all. Head to Sierra or Sierra.com for the brands you want at the prices that let you do it all. From athletic to athletic-ish, Sierra's got it.
5 a.m., I'm up with a crisp Celsius energy drink. Running 12 miles today. Grab a green juice, quick change, and head to work. Meetings, workshops, one more Celsius, no slowing down. Working late, but obviously still meeting the girls for a little dancing. Celsius. Live. Fit. Go. Grab a cold, refreshing Celsius at your local retailer or locate now at Celsius.com.
Where's your playlist taking you? Down the highway? To the mountains? Or just into daydream mode while you're stuck in traffic? With over 4,000 hotels worldwide, Best Western is there to help you make the most of your getaway. Wherever that is. Because the only thing better than a great playlist is a great trip. Life's the trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Book direct and save at bestwestern.com.
This episode is brought to you by Peloton. Break through the busiest time of year with the brand new Peloton Cross Training Tread Plus. Powered by Peloton IQ. With real-time guidance and endless ways to move, you can personalize your workouts and train with confidence. Helping you reach your goals in less time. Let yourself run, lift, sculpt, push, and go. Explore the new Peloton Cross-Training Tread Plus at onepeloton.com.
If you've listened to this show for a while, you know that if there's one tool I absolutely cannot live without, it's the Onyx Hunt app. I use Onyx year-round to mark spots, find new properties, access landowner information, and so much more. But throughout the year, I tend to use the app differently depending on what I'm doing. Right now, I'm always using it to find stream bank easements in the drift list, and when I'm not doing that, I'm using the wind direction feature to mark how wind and thermals impact areas I plan to spend time in this fall. To learn more about all the other features that Onyx offers, head on over to onyxmaps.com.
Next up, no matter where my spring pursuits take me, I know I'll be hunting in comfort with my Huntworth camo. They make high-quality, technical hunting clothing at a fraction of the price of other brands. Last turkey season, I hunted in temps ranging from the teens to the mid-80s, snowstorms, pouring rain, blazing sun, and all of that was during the same 10-day trip, and my Huntworth gear had me covered for every single bit of it. My favorites for this time of year include the Durham lightweight pants, the Shelton hoodie, and of course, the Winstead rain suit lives in my Hickory pack at all times. You can grab your Huntworth gear at huntworthgear.com.
Summer is here, and while hunting season might still feel like a long ways off, it's time to start getting your gear dialed in for this fall. This season, I'm proud to be partnering with XOP, makers of cutting-edge, lightweight, and affordable mobile hunting equipment. Whether you've been mobile hunting for years and looking for an awesome ultralight addition to your kit, or you're totally new to mobile hunting and want to give it a try without breaking the bank, XOP has a stand, platform, set of sticks, or a harness for you. This fall, I plan to be using the super lightweight X2 climbing sticks, retrograde platform, and the Mondo hybrid harness. Go build your kit today at xopgear.com.
Yeah.
What is going on, everyone? Welcome back to another episode of the Wisconsin Sportsman Podcast. I'm your host, Pierce Nellis, and this is your home for all things outdoors in the Badger State. Folks, we got a good one this week. I've got the Emperor of the Sportsman's Empire on the line, Mr. Dan Johnson. Dan, how are we doing today, man?
Doing good, man. True story, it's 8 o'clock, okay? And usually I wake up automatically at 6 every morning. I don't need an alarm or anything like that. I have no kids in the house. And I think that's part of the whole deal, is the kids are awake by then. And so I'm up. So the kids are all at camp now. And I literally woke up 15 minutes ago. So if I have a delayed reaction to some of your questions, it's because the caffeine has not hit my body yet.
No worries, man. You know, you got a big storm cell rolling through down by you too. And yeah, it's we'll blame it on that. I'm right there with you. Well, I don't know. I beat you by like 5 minutes. I will say that. I'm glad that I'm not the only one.
There you go.
Sleeping in a little bit this morning. But I will say for 8 a.m., I'm not expecting, or I wasn't expecting to be like sweating this much. But it's a little humid around here. But man, you just got back from a trip kind of up my neck of the woods at the old Vortex headquarters. How was that?
Oh, dude, it was so much fun. So much fun. It was an ambassador meeting or rendezvous or whatever you want to call it. So they put us up in a hotel along with other guys, like
the Deer Valley Lodge. Nonetheless.
Yeah, the Deer Valley Lodge. Yeah, exactly. The old indoor water park golf course. And they put us up with the rest of their ambassadors, like the guys from the Hunting Public. I think Pat Reeves, he's a Wisconsinite. Mm-hmm. He was there along with like the Identical Draw guys. I mean, just any and everybody that basically Vortex sponsors or works with or whatever was there. And it was like 2 days of like learning about their products, learning about their company. One day, dude, this is no joke, I probably shot 300 rounds through a 9mm. They put us, they have their Vortex Edge Training Center.
Yep.
It's just like the state of the art indoor shooting range. And so I shot a handgun for like 6 straight hours. And one thing I learned about shooting a handgun is I suck at shooting a handgun. Like, I'll put an arrow at 60 yards in a target the size of a softball, mm-hmm. but you put me in a handgun, and then you time me like, hey, you got to do this, shoot 5 rounds at 15, shoot 5 rounds at 10, shoot 5 rounds at 5. Yeah, I'm missing that target.
Dude, there's an art to it for sure.
Oh,
like,
man.
I don't know how some of those guys do it. I mean, I guess it's, you know, like anything, it's just repetition and practice. But like, it seems like some people just, it's like an extension of their arm when they pull the trigger on that thing. I am not one of those people. I'm right there with you, man. It is all over the board.
I was joking. I said, if someone broke into my house, if someone was going to break into my house, I would probably do more damage throwing the gun at them than I would actually shooting them.
Well, at least, you know, they make cans of pepper spray, right? Or, you know,
exactly.
If necessary, they got shotguns. Yep, exactly. That's cool, man. Yeah, it's so the old Vortex HQ, when I say it's in my neck of the woods, right across the highway, you've got Barneveld Elementary. Well, I guess it's a K-12. It's a tiny little postage stamp of a town, old Barneveld is. But that's actually where I went to elementary school, K through sixth grade.
Nice.
And yeah, if you would have kept driving, I won't give too much detail, but within about 4 miles of there, you would have found the old family farm. So that's it's a neat little area. And that, you're right, that edge, I guess, well, the whole campus in general, but that whole edge firing facility is just insane down there. They did it wasn't a learn, it was a deer hunter sight-in
at that facility, and it was badass. Yeah. Like that, just an awesome company. They're making Wisconsin proud. But man, like we talked, well, I don't know. We're talking off air. We don't have like a massive agenda for this episode aside from we're going to be talking deer, right? It's kind of, we're encroaching on the space where it's time to like, I guess maybe start seriously talking about fall, even though it still feels like forever away and stuff. And I know for a lot of people that's tuning their bows and stuff like that. But I also, I'm excited to have you on because I was on your show a couple months ago. You got to pick my brain a little bit, ask me some questions. But throughout my time at the Sportsman's Empire, brief as it has been, I haven't gotten a chance to kind of pick your brain and learn more about you. So I'm stoked about this. I'm just curious off the top of my head. I've heard kind of the legend of Dan Johnson in his journey.
It's all fake. It's all fake. None of it. It's all bullshit. None of it's real, dude.
Okay. I'm going to scribble out. Why are you not cooler than Mark Canyon? Dang it. So I guess I want to start here. What is, I guess, your story of how you got into the outdoor space and kind of evolved to where you are now with the Sportsman's Empire? I know you had some roots with Mr. Kenyon back at the Wired to Hunt podcast, but I guess like from ground zero, what did that process or journey look like for you?
Oh man, so really I'll indulge you, but I'm gonna go hyper fast. I'm just gonna go timeline style on this. All right, so I was working in Alabama in 2005. I got my finger cut off in Georgia when I was working for a company there. Then I moved to Alabama and was running my own factory at the age of 25. And I was working like 120. I worked 120 days in a row. Minimum 11 hours a day. Damn. And so I can remember days I was working like 14 hours a day. And my body, my mind, my soul was just absolutely crushed. And I said, I'm done. So I quit. I moved back to Iowa with my girlfriend at the time. And then she decided she didn't want to date me anymore. And I was kind of left empty. It was weird. Like, my life was kind of like a country song. Like I quit my job and then I lost, I got laid off from another job. I lost my girl and it was just, I don't know. It was like, it was sad. I was feeling sorry for myself. And then one of my buddies from high school reached out to me. He's like, hey man, I need you to meet somebody. And so I met him at a local bar and I met this guy named Todd Prignitz. Now, for those of you guys who don't know, Todd was he was making DVDs. He wanted to start making DVDs and his like whitetail hunting DVDs, White Knuckle Productions. So I started hanging out with him, shed hunting with him, turkey hunting with him, deer hunting with him. And then I started working with him. And I started going to trade shows and videoing my hunts and helping him video his hunts. And so really like the start of me in this industry and the start of me being like creating content started in about 2006. And that's right when I started like getting back into hunting back then, because I hunted when I was young. I hunted when I was in high school for a little bit. Very rarely did I hunt in college because I was doing other dumb shit. And so I was like, college was over. The real world was here. And so I just started doing as much hunting as I possibly could. And so we started making DVDs. That went on for like, 2007. So like 7 years, 8 years or something like that. I was part of that. I helped him start up one of his companies called Wicked Tree Gear. He did a lot, all the designing. I was the guy who called Lowe's and did a lot of the phone calls trying to get into like Cabela's and like Lowe's and other, like trying to sell to other places, a lot of the sales work. And then we parted ways, that company sold. And then I think it was like 2014. Like I had parted ways with Wired or White Knuckle Productions. They sold, they ended up selling Wicked Tree Gear. And that spring, I invited Mark Kenyon down to come shed hunt in Iowa. And so I brought him on my farm and we went shed hunting. We found a couple sheds. But then while he was down there, we're drinking a couple beers after a shed hunt. And he's like, "Hey man, I'm thinking about starting a podcast. What, like, would you be interested in being my co-host?" And so 2014, I believe, is when early 2014, I believe, is when he started his. And then I ended up, so we did that for 8 months or something like that. And then I started the Nine Finger Chronicles because there was definitely holes that needed to be filled as far as products, as far as who he was talking to. So like Mark really focused on the well-known people within the community and within the industry. And then I started interviewing like companies, like brand type stuff. And then I started interviewing people like, I don't know, just like the Andy Mays of the world. Mm-hmm. I started off like talking with the Andy Mays of the world and, you know, not necessarily well-known in the space back then. Now those guys are all exposed, right? Everybody knows who some of these silent killers are, so to speak. And then later that year, I started the Nine Finger Chronicles. 2017, I started the network, and here we are.
Love it, dude. That, what a freaking cool story. And I don't know, man. That's sick. I mean, I'm got a startup of my own and stuff, and you know, just I've talked to a couple people on the show before about how deer hunting and kind of entrepreneurship are a little bit, really, I guess hunting in general and entrepreneurship are kind of, you almost need like a similar mindset for each, where it's like, you got to be willing to just like embrace shit for quite a while until you get that payoff. So dude, that is, thank you for telling me that story for one, but two, that is, I mean, one heck of a story back then. Like, I mean, you mentioned there, it's like, you know, finding those silent killers and stuff. I'm assuming, you know, back then, I mean, 2014, like, I think Instagram had like just kind of popped up and everything. So I guess Facebook was kind of like gaining some traction and stuff, but like, how was finding guests? Like, how did you like find some of those, the killers, I guess the less known killers of the time?
So back then, it still happens today, but back then, people were like, man, like they would all post on forums, or they would post their stuff on Facebook group pages. And I was a member of a couple of them. And one of the, like, I would just look at a picture of a big buck that someone would post. And then I'd reach out to them. I'd be like, "Hey man, can I interview you?" And they'd be like, "Okay, yeah, sure." And I can remember one of my very first, what I would call hunter profile podcasts. And I really do wish I knew this guy's name, because he was a really good interviewer. He had a really good story, but he told me that he would use a boat to go across the lake and hunt a piece of public ground on the opposite side of the lake. And he was finding success. So the story is, he's using water access and killing big deer every year in an area where there was a ton of hunting pressure. But because he was using a boat, he's like, "Dude, the deer just straight up ignored me. I would put my boat right into a cove. I'd get out, walk up to a tree stand." And it was pretty simple, right? And so long story short, I was interviewing guys like that who, in my opinion, were killing the same quality of deer or animals than the rest of the guys in the hunting industry were, but their stories were, in my opinion, much better.
Yeah.
Because it wasn't like I planted this food plot, I sat in a box blind and I waited until he showed up. Like, instead of waiting for the deer to come to you, the guys that I was interviewing were going to the deer, finding them and killing them. And for some reason, like, I hate to say it, but the story makes the kill cooler, right? It's like,
yeah.
Oh, you shot a 180 over a food plot in a box blind? Awesome. Like, okay, good, you know, whatever. But if someone's like, dude, I used a boat. I got up at like 3 a.m. I used a boat. I went all the way across this lake. I sat up in the dark. I came up, you know, like it's just when the story is about someone who puts in more physical effort to go to deer, for some reason, I just like those stories better, man.
Totally. Yeah. I mean, yeah. It's the old adage, you can't tell cool stories if you don't do cool stuff. Right. And I mean, I'm right there with you. Like I mean, for me, I think it's hearing what their thought process was and how they reached that point and how many times they had to like whittle that process down in order to figure out like, okay, here's how I need to actually access this spot. And like, you know, encounters with that deer the year prior or something, but like they, you know, through water access realized, oh shit, I need to be in this cove and not against this deadfall or whatever. He bedded right against this dead, you know, whatever it may be. And like just putting the pieces together, because it not only creates the story for the hunter, but it creates a story for that deer as well, which is, you know, I was talking to Doug Duren last November, I think it was. And I asked him, when it comes to, you know, the image of hunters, and, you know, recruiting more hunters and everything, what are we getting right? And he said, it's the power of telling good, strong stories and not just posting grip and grins. You know, those are great for your buddies and everything, but when you can actually show the process of how difficult it actually was and how much work went into harvesting that deer, that's what's going to get people, you know, non-hunters or even just kind of that agnostic middle to actually, you know, think about, you know, leaning towards hunters. Man, that's super freaking cool, dude. So at this point in the year, now it's July, hotter than blazes, super humid. I don't know if the rain's ever going to stop around here, but what does preseason prep look like for you this time of year?
Don't even ask me this question, dude. Pat, I'm just going to say pass.
Fair
because,
enough.
Dude, I am not ready at all for this season, man. I got, I got like 20 trail cameras. Guess where they're at? In my garage. I have a handful of tree stands. Guess where they're at? In my garage. Or, you know, some of them are out. I had delusions of grandeur this spring, wanting to go in and do some habitat work. Did I cut one tree? Nope. So did I put any mineral out yet? Nope. So my focus right now, and every year it seems to be getting more and more and more this way, dude, I'm in dad mode right now, and I will be in dad mode until baseball season's over, which unfortunately is to the end of August or to the end of July. I'm really hoping that this Friday, the head coach cancels practice to my son's, to my oldest son's team, because we have a practice or we have a tournament this weekend. So if that happens, I am leaving and I'm going to go do some farm work. And I'm hoping now I say that with delusions of grandeur,
mm-hmm.
because there's even if it gets canceled, there's still like a 90% chance that I don't go because I have to work and because my wife has to work. But my only grace is saving grace is that I might be able to take my kids with me too. So we will see, basically.
Sure.
Long story short, I am not ready. I haven't even, I've been dealing with some shoulder issues and my shoulder is just now starting to feel better. And I haven't, it, This is embarrassing for a guy who prides himself as a bow hunter. I have not pulled my bow back since I killed my deer in November.
No kidding.
Yep.
Dang. What's the what are we dealing with as far as a shoulder injury there?
Well, each shoulder has a torn labrum.
Ah, that'll do it.
Yep.
That'll definitely do it.
So I have basically been like this past season. Like I don't think people understand how close I was to having to maybe pick up a crossbow. Like my shoulders, I could barely lift my arm about higher than my shoulder. And so when I was climbing sticks, dude, it sucked, man. It sucked having to climb up climbing sticks. And then my shoulder would hurt for about 30 minutes while I sat down in my tree stand or was hanging from my saddle. And then I was really down to shooting like three to five arrows a day. That's it. Just to make sure my sight was on. Yeah. And so I was really limited because my number one goal was you cannot shoot a crossbow. Don't shoot a crossbow. And so leading up to this season, I needed to get my shoulders healthy again. And I think now they're in a place where I can slowly start ramping up and starting to shoot again.
Sure. Dang, man. You got me nervous, man. Hearing, I've talked to a couple people just off the podcast who are dealing with shoulder stuff and just the hindrance that's, you know, shown itself to be, you know, in the hunting space and stuff. I hadn't even thought about trying to get up a tree, but dang, man. Well, hopefully that continues on the right track and, you know, you're able to start slinging arrows here soon. So I guess I want to back up to the preseason prep then. So you mentioned August is probably when it's more than likely at least all going to be the, I don't know.
Yeah.
You're going to get a good shot of it in there probably at least in August and stuff, which isn't terrible because Iowa's got an October 1st opener. So you got a little time to rest the property and stuff. Has that always been the case? I mean, you mentioned kids play a big part in it, but like in previous years and stuff, was it a year-round pursuit sort of deal?
Oh yeah, but like before my kid, like okay, before kids, I was 365 deer. I mean, I was like, I would probably be close to 100% ready by now, other than maybe making some adjustments to my bow. Like usually, I have all my tree stands set up. All my shooting lanes trimmed out. I've done all my scouting. By this time, I would have had trail cameras out since May. Because one of my favorite things is getting velvet pictures of whitetails. Mm-hmm. Just seeing them in velvet. Now, because of all that stuff, it all gets pushed back. And the good thing is that my main farm, really the only thing that I have to do is put up trail cameras. Because most of my historic rut, my pre-rut rut spots are already, there's already a stand location in there. And you know, with the mobility of a saddle, once the season gets here and I need to make a quick adjustment, I got my saddle as a backup plan. Right. Nice. And so I can make those adjustments. With that said, but yeah, I mean, you just add in the complexity of a family man and someone who prioritize my family over deer hunting, period. Like that's why I'm a coach. That's why I go to almost all of my kids' sporting events. Like the only time I miss something is when I'm on my hunting trips the year. Like this year I'll go to Kansas and I'll probably miss one of my son's basketball games. Kansas. When I go to South Dakota in October, I'll probably miss one of his football games. And so outside of missing those events, those weeks, my goal is to bat 1,000 outside of the hunting season for my kids.
Absolutely, man. I love it. That's These questions are come. I don't mean to sound naive. These questions come from a 28-year-old who is unmarried with no kids. So I'm, I hope to be in those shoes one day, but you know, for now it's just,
you brought up a great point, and I don't want to take your podcast over, but I have to mention this now that we're kind of on this topic, and that is time, right? You're unmarried now, right?
Yep.
You have a girlfriend?
Live with her, yeah.
Oh, you live, okay. So you have kind of a little bit of a responsibility in your life, but you have no kids.
Yeah.
Right. You're young. You have no responsibilities right now other than a job and a girlfriend. Here's what I will say, and I hope anybody who is in like around your age, is take the opportunities while you have them right now. Right? You want to go on an out-of-state hunt? Do it right now. You want to go on a big trip, or you know, like, hey man, I want to spend 2 weeks in a place, depending on what your schedule allows. Go do it right now, because you get married, it's like a volume on a car radio. You turn the volume down when you get married. Oh, you got your first kid, volume goes down. Third kid, right? And every, like, hunting gets watered down by the rest of life. So to all the young people out there who have no kids, who are not married yet, dude, don't waste your time. If you love hunting, go hunt. Like, hunt as much as you want. If you want to hunt every day of the season, go hunt every day of the season. Because ultimately, if you decide to be a family man, that you're going to get, it's going to water, hunting will be watered down. Although it's, the excitement doesn't necessarily go away for hunting. It's just that you're not going to be able to hunt as much. And so for me, I say that because I spent a lot of my youth before, like, dude, I should have and could have gone on elk hunts throughout my entire 20s. Instead, I chose to drink alcohol, right? I could have gone to all these out-of-state whitetail hunts and do all that. Instead, I chose to sit at a bar stool. And I feel like I don't necessarily regret the decisions that I've made, because they've all led me to this point now that I'm really happy with. But like, a lot of people want to do one thing but do something else instead. And if you got a dream to go out and bow hunt whatever state and have all these adventure hunts, go do it right now.
Totally, man. Yeah, that's see the again, these are visions of grandeur. But when I started my business, where it's involving mobile asphalt plants, so road repair in rural remote areas, much like Wyoming, the Dakotas, stuff like that. The plan on paper when I started it was, when we have to start doing sales trips and have to start running out there, all right, going to run to South Dakota for a week. Meetings on Monday. Maybe I won't come back till Thursday, and I'll squeeze in a few days out there for whatever, you know, whatever pursuit that may be.
Yep.
Works on paper. We'll see if it actually works in reality, because I have a feeling I'm in for a rude awakening. But on the note of things getting watered down there and kind of, you know, the volume being turned down, when you throw kids into the mix, you're at the point now where your kids are starting to get old enough where you're able to involve them more in the outdoor space. Has that kind of turned the volume back up, seeing them have success? I know your daughter shot a turkey, two turkeys this year, and stuff like that. Has that been kind of a nice counterbalance, I guess, to
I say this 100% honestly.
Mm-hmm.
Her shooting those turkeys trumps anything that I personally have ever done in the woods. My big bucks, like learning how to like it all shadows. It's in the shadows, man. Mm-hmm. Like, all I care about is my family, right? And now when my daughter and my son are starting to show interest in hunting, holy cow, man. it fires me up and it almost makes me feel young again. And so what I want to do is I don't want to push them. I just want to guide them down the path to hunting. I want to give them any opportunity that they want to do. If my daughter or son comes up to me and goes, "Hey dad, I want to learn how to trap raccoons." Shit. I'll then learn how to trap raccoons and I'll help them do whatever it is that they want to do. Right. And yes, 100%, it fires me up and it gets me excited for hunting again, not for my own, but it's because it's just another opportunity to spend time with my kids, man, period.
Totally.
There's a country song. I believe it's a country song about a guy. He's fishing with his daughter. And it's basically the guy in the song is basically saying, like, she just thinks we're fishing and we're not fishing. It's just spending time with the people that you ultimately love. And that's why I love hunting with my kids.
Right. Love it, man. Yep. Absolutely love it. So when your sons or your daughters say, "Hey dad, I want to go on an Alaskan moose hunt." Then you're pulling the trigger on that one right away. And
No. Daddy hasn't been to Alaska yet. Now, someday, yeah, I would love totally. To do it. But, you know, I've looked at some of those prices and they better start saving right now.
Absolutely, man. Well, that's super cool to hear. And, you know, the thing that, you know, so you mentioned you coach your kids, you know, sporting, you know, leagues and events and stuff like that. And, you know, to be able to, you know, share that, like I, you know, just in past years or whatever, like after I quit playing football in college, I did a little high school coaching. And even for that, it got me amped coaching, you know, freshman football with, you know, a bunch of 14-year-olds and like helping them kind of figure it out and, you know, all that sort of stuff. So to be able to do that also in the outdoor space as well, I mean, that sounds freaking awesome, man. That's phenomenal. Yep. On the note of deer here, circling back there, you mentioned a couple of things here. One, you got yourself a tethered hat on. I know they're a sponsor of your show. You mentioned having the saddle as a backup on the property. Having a saddle on private land might be the most underrated deer strategy I've come across. How long have you been saddle hunting for? It's kind of a newer endeavor for you, isn't it?
Yes, this will be my third season.
Okay.
Using one. And when I say this is 100% honesty, like I don't wear safety harnesses anymore. I just wear my saddle, even when I'm in a tree stand. And so you can take that away as kind of a hybrid. I'll be honest, man, I have a bad back and I have bad knees. And so I'm pretty beat up and the saddle lets me relax my lower back for a little bit instead of sitting or standing. And then I can sit down and relax my knees. Right. And so a little bit of a hybrid method there, but at the same time, when it's time to go in and like an ultra precise strike in on a specific deer or a specific terrain feature that I don't have prepared, but I've seen them come in and out, then it's time to rock the saddle.
Totally. I was just about to ask, like, do you have a preference between the two? Like if you had to, like, I know that it's application dependent, but now that you've run tree stands in the past, you've thrown the saddle into the mix and everything. Is there one that like, it just feels better targeting deer in this, or I feel more like, let me put it this way. Do you feel that all of the perks of saddle hunting that are marketed, the whole, like I can shoot 360 around a tree, I'm ultra mobile, it's lightweight, I can get in any tree and sort of that kind of stuff. Do you feel that those have lived up to the hype?
So I've been using a Lone Wolf Assault, the smaller platform. And four sticks since 2006. And so basically up until a couple of years ago, man, I could blindfold, set one up in the dark, no lights or whatever, you know, like it became part of me and I could do it quick and I could get up in a tree quick. And now it's just, do I feel more comfortable now, right now, in a tree stand? Probably. But when it's time, like when it's time to go in, and I know everybody talks about it, but when it's time to go in and be ultra light and ultra mobile, dude, a saddle is so quiet, right? Like, yes, you still have to set up the platform, but it's this big.
Yep.
Right. I mean, you can do it when you're hanging a tree stand. You got to like pin it to the tree, wrap your arm around it, do this. It's a little bit bulkier, even the smaller tree stands, right? A little bit bulkier. And so the hunting, like it is so, it's awesome. It's awesome. The thing that I'm not quite comfortable with yet, but I'm learning on, is if a deer is coming from my draw hand side and I'm, let's say I'm facing the tree right here. And my plan is to have all of this to my left open.
Yep.
The shot that I'm still working on and I'm not 100% comfortable yet is the wraparound shot where you have to like kind of dip your butt and kind of either like tuck your right shoulder back up against the tree and try to shoot to your draw arm side.
Yep.
I haven't quite mastered that yet, but that just takes time. Right. And so I'm pretty good at putting I'm pretty good at putting myself in the right position and putting in enough time on these properties to know where deer are coming from so that I can, like, number one, hide myself, and number two, make sure that I have hide myself and like put myself in a position where I don't have to do that shot.
Right.
All I have to do is draw and shoot. So
totally. Yeah. I guess in those moments where you've had deer come into that weak side, have you been kicking yourself like, man, if I was in the tree stand, I would
no.
have just been able to pivot. No, you still prefer the saddle.
Yeah. I haven't had it happen yet.
Sure.
So until it happens, like I was in a tree stand wearing a saddle hanging off of my tree stand when I shot my buck last year, mm-hmm. but he was 25 yards or something like that, broadside. And it was perfect.
Right.
I didn't have to move. He came in front of me. And so I just drew back. I had to turn a little bit, but that's it, man. It's just like all equipment. You have to practice with it a little bit. And I do in my backyard. I climb up into my tree house. I put my platform into the tree, and I shoot at a target in my backyard at like pretty steep angles, 20 yards, hanging off there, trying to get as consistent as possible with it. Practicing shooting out of a saddle is a little tedious,
mm-hmm.
because if you're going to do it right, you got to be elevated. So that means you shoot your however many arrows, get down, pull them out of a target, climb back up the tree, get in the saddle, and then do it again. So,
right.
It's its own tool, right? It is tree stand. Like for me, if it's the rut, right? If it's past pre-rut and I'm going to a location where I know there is going to be deer movement, a rut funnel, a pinch point of those sorts. Yeah, I already have a tree stand there. I'm going to probably use a tree stand. I don't have to carry anything in. It's already set up. Now, when I go to Kansas and I'm going to be running and gunning on every property that I'm at, I'll have a saddle with me. I mean, it's so easy to set up. It is, I don't know, it's just different tools, man. And there is a tool for every occasion. And I like having as many tools in my tool belt as possible.
Absolutely. I was curious to hear what your response was going to be there, especially after you said you used the Lone Wolf Assault for that many years. I had kind of a weird transition where I was like, I hunted ladder stands and climbers for I mean, the better part of 15 years. And then got a saddle, hunted that for the last three, got super comfortable with it. And then this year, I'm going to be running the XOP retrograde platform. It's kind of like the same size, a little bit smaller than the Lone Wolf 0.5, but it's designed for that hybrid application. And I was in the exact same boat where, like, right off the bat, the first time I climbed up a tree in the yard and I tried to hang that thing up, I was like, holy shit, this thing is, I don't even know how I'm going to like get this thing spun around or get it situated on the tree and everything. But like you said there, it's practice and getting familiar with that piece of gear to the point where you can throw it up, you know, at 4 in the morning in pitch black, and all that, man. That's super cool. You mentioned earlier a little bit about scouting and, you know, trail cam photos and stuff like that. About a week ago, I was flipping through. Well, I went to the barbershop. I was sitting in the waiting room, flipping through a stack of magazines. I came across the October 2023 North American Whitetail magazine. I was flipping through it, and I believe it was like the top 10 deer minds, or I forget what the article was titled, but you were in there. I was flipping through, and all of a sudden I was like, son of a gun, I know that guy. Your method for deer hunting success was learning and patterning doe groups on your properties. Can you elaborate a little bit on that strategy and kind of what all goes into that?
Yeah. So I'll keep it. This is what I've said ever since I've really kind of grasped the idea is, why do guys go to bars? Because girls are there, right? Why do guys do the things that they do? Because of girls, right? And so I was sitting there one day. I'm like, why am I at this bar right now? And then I'm looking around, all these beautiful women are there. I'm like, that's why I'm here, right? And so I was in Wisconsin a long time ago with some guys that I knew from back in the White Knuckle production days, mm-hmm. who all lived around the Madison area. And so I was like, okay. And I'm driving back home on the Sunday, and I'm just like, it kind of just fell on me. I was like, why am I going after these bucks when all I have to do is find the does and then be in the woods at the right time? So kind of like to fast forward all this, it is why, like what happens in the rut? The bucks want to breed the does. Okay. So instead of going in and trying to bump all these bucks, you know, and being really aggressive on these bucks, why don't I find the doe groups? Okay. And then that evolved to, you know, if I can find a doe group in mid October, right? Why am I hunting early season? Because the bucks aren't up scent checking these does the first week of October, right? The bucks aren't even all the way up until like the first 3 weeks of October. The bucks aren't, they're not even interested in these does at all until, you know, there starts to get a little smell in the air. And this last week of October in the first week of November, right, depending on what your farms are like, that's pre-rut, right? Sometimes the rut doesn't hit on my farm until like the 7th of November. Like one farm particular, the pre-rut is all the way up until November 5th, 6th, 7th, depending on when that first doe pops.
Huh.
And so I'm just like, okay, I'm going to sit here and I'm going to try to hunt these doe groups. If I can get a doe group to walk by me at 20 yards inside and they don't bust me, that's a win. Because guess what happens? The closer you get to that breeding season, something's either going to be there waiting for them or something's going to be following them a couple times. And so I kind of had this, it was actually last week or this weekend or something. I had a guy, or I made a fate or Instagram post about it, where all my bucks except one have been by themselves when I have killed them, right? So one of those bucks was like November 14th. He was chasing a doe, shot him. This past year's buck, he was by himself. So my guess is he came off of a doe, went back into the searching phase, and I shot him by himself. First and only deer to come through. But outside of that, every other deer that I have shot has been within the first 7 days of November, in a period where the bucks were ready to breed, but the does were not ready to breed. And that makes them susceptible to calling. That makes them a little bit more fired up from an aggressive standpoint. And so all of those deer were coming into known doe staging areas or coming through a known doe bedding area for a morning hunt. And I was able to call them in, or they just walked right in front of me. And so I'm hunting doe groups in hopes that at some point within that pre-rut time frame, those doe groups, those doe areas are going to produce one of the bucks that I know is already there.
I love it, man. And so you mentioned staging areas or those bedding areas and stuff. How tight do you like to get to those? You kind of mentioned if I can get in there, if I can get close to those does, the more the merrier. Or do you like to stay further out, focus on like a scrape or, you know, a main trail going in?
I'm not that guy. I'm not that guy who tries to get 25 yards from a bedded buck. To be honest, I think some of that's bullshit. Like, these guys are like, yeah, man, I snuck up to 20 yards of him, got up in my tree stand, and when he stood up, I shot him. I have a hard time believing that, just from my own experiences. Okay. It probably happens, don't get me wrong, but I don't like to go where deer are at. I like to be in that line somewhere where deer are going.
Sure.
Okay. And so I'm a huge fan of staging areas in for afternoon hunts, right? And once they get by me, then I have an opportunity to get down out of my tree. I don't have to necessarily walk through their destination food source, and I can leave without disturbing them. And then the next morning, in the mornings, I usually like to hunt bedding areas. Why? Because when I go into a bedding area in the morning, the deer are not there, right? The early season, they may be back there earlier, but I don't hunt a ton in the early season. I'm doing my Western trips. And so I like, during that pre-rut time frame, I like to get into the bedding areas in the morning and just wait, because they're somewhere else coming back to this area. And so it's just one of those things where I've learned, like, as we all know, man, there's tons of different strategies out there to accomplish the same thing. But for me, it is to be where the deer are going and not where they either end up. Like, I really like to hunt bedding areas in the mornings, but I do it in a way where it's not like inside of a bedding area. Like, you have to give yourself an opportunity to leave that area. Because if you don't and you bump deer leaving, then the next hunt you have out of that tree stand or out of that area is not going to be as good.
Right.
I like to be invisible as much as possible through access routes. And that has helped, I believe wholeheartedly, that has allowed me to have the amount of success that I've had.
Totally. I'm curious, in your experience, you mentioned, you know, the majority of those are kind of pre-rut, first week of November, kills. Have you noticed a trend either direction between morning or evening success, which you've had better luck with?
During the pre-rut?
Yeah.
Yeah, if pre-rut's afternoons. Uh-huh. And I'm not saying it's all afternoons, but what I will say is that, right, the bucks are probably out pushing does or like scent checking does all night long. They're probably a little tired, right? Now in the afternoon, they've been bedded all day still.
Yeah.
And it's not like they're out cruising November 1st, 2nd on my farms. They're bedded down in the same areas, and then they stand up, and then they go check these does, and they're rested. They've usually water before I see them, or they're on their way to water, and they just are, they're ready. It's like I like working out in the like early afternoon, mid morning. I still have energy, mm-hmm. as opposed to like chasing does at the end of the, like at the end of the night, and they're going back to bed. And so I really do feel like the pre-rut is for afternoon sits, just because they're ready to go for the day. Right. They're ready to go. I see them, you know, downwind scent checking does. I see them bumping does. I see them pinning their ears back to show their dominance to other younger bucks. And that's something that I don't necessarily see a lot of in the morning type hunts. It's like, it's almost like everybody in the afternoon hunts, everybody's up, they're congregated, they all spread out, and then they all kind of trickle back into their bedding areas the next morning.
Right.
I think the afternoons is where it's at.
I like it, man. So then what, so say you don't fill that tag, then that's when, I mean, rut, I mean, that's all day sit season anyways, but at that
not
point,
for me.
No, real. All right.
Not, I hate sitting all day. Like, so when I say I hunt doe groups, I'm hunting doe groups because the does, they're not up on their feet all day long.
Mm-hmm.
They live and die by the same routine all year round. The bucks are the ones going crazy,
right?
Not the does, right? And so if you have a hot doe, like she's hot right now, that's the only time she'll be up on her feet running around, right? The other does are going back to their bedding areas, and they're bedding down all day long,
right?
That's not happening in. That's not happening. Like the does aren't also running around. They're going bed to food pattern all mm-hmm. year round. Bed to food pattern, bed to food pattern. That differs if a buck bumps them and it starts to chase them, but eventually they're going down to bed. These deer are not up on their feet all 24 hours a day, all day long, even in the rut. And so at some point in the day, and I'm talking about does specifically, they're going and bedding down. And then they'll stand up, and then the buck will breed the doe a little bit, and then they'll bed down a little bit. And then, you know, they're still bedding at some point. So if they're still bedding at some point, then that means for me that I can still live by the afternoon staging area, morning bedding area type method, because the does are still on that bed to food pattern.
Sure. So that, okay. That, as you were explaining that, I was like, I'm catching it now. So it, yeah, it's yep. This entire strategy here shies away from the, you know, what a lot of people hear, you know, hunt the pinch point, hunt the funnel, hunt whatever, all day sit, you know, during the rut mm-hmm. and stuff like that. I like that a lot. 'Cause then you're right. Once the bucks are, you know, when they make it through that pinch point, over that saddle, over whatever, they're headed to the does no matter what. And mm-hmm. they're probably going to spend a little more time in that doe bedding area anyways. So that, I like that a lot, yep. man. I really yep. like that. What habits do you think hold hunters back the most? I know this is a can of worms, but.
Getting tired.
All right.
Getting tired. 'Cause usually people are real excited. And they're like, okay, it's hunting season. They're doing all the right things. Day three, day four, day five. Okay, I've gotten up early. I've probably gone to bed late. Especially like for me, I'm lucky because I leave my family when it's hunting season. Okay, I'm going down to my parents' old house, or I'm sleeping in my truck somewhere, And I'm getting more sleep during the hunting season than I am than I am usually, right? And so my responsibility has gone down, and I don't have to deal with any of that stuff. Like some guys, I'm guessing that they hunt in the morning, then they have to go back and be a dad and go to work, and then they try to hunt the afternoon, and they do that during that week long rut or that 2 week period or however long it is, and they start to get tired. And I used to do this when I was newish, before I knew what I was doing. And that was, I go into an I take a perfect access route, get in the stand, you know, I'd see deer. And then instead of getting out of the tree and walking that same access route back, I would walk straight line to my car or my truck.
Sure.
And just probably blowing deer out left and right, walking through destination food sources and stuff instead of, you know, taking a little bit of the hard way. I think when it comes to habits, I think people call too much. I think guys are, I'm not saying they're lazy, but their mind isn't strong enough to remember that access routes are important, not only going in, but just as important going out. Like I'm an access freak, man. I don't hunt all day, so I have to have good access routes to get in and out of the, you know, in and out of the tree stand, so I can hunt those spots as many times as possible. Those tree stands, those saddle locations, they're good for a reason. So the goal is to hunt them as many times as possible. Right. You don't want to, like, you've heard people talk about burning stands. Yeah. Well, it's only burning stands if you are taking bad access routes and if you're getting busted while you're in that location. But if you can get in and out of that and you have great wind, dude, there's a couple stands that I will hunt over and over and over because my access routes are locked tight.
I like it, man. I like that a lot. And, you know, to your point too, there about not running an all day sit, that just makes access either going in or going out that much easier. Cause you know, I mean, yeah, at one point of your hunt, you can see what's going on with all that, man. That's,
yep.
I like that. Thank you for expanding on that. I mean that the doe bedding thing, the habit that was good stuff right there, man. So you kind of alluded to it.
Yeah.
You've got a Kansas tag, a South Dakota tag. What are your plans for this fall?
In my head, here's what I want. I want to go to South Dakota. I'm going to kill my first ever mule deer buck. I've been hunting mule deer now for a while, and I've just been coming up short every time. So like I'm trying to stay positive. I want to go and kill not a giant. I'll kill any legal mule deer buck at this point. Mm-hmm. Right? I'm going to kill a mule deer buck. Then I want to come back to Iowa. The goal is, I'm hoping, I'd like to go to my main farm, chase this specific 10-pointer that was around this year, or head back to my new farm and try to get the job done. I'm guessing within the first 7 days in November, or maybe the 30th, 31st, whatever. Now, 31st is a no-go because of trick-or-treating. Got to spend time with the family. But then November 1st to the 7th, I'm hoping that I can get the job done with my archery tag in Iowa. Then I'll probably take a couple days with the family. Then I'll drive to Kansas and spend a week down in Kansas, hoping to get the job done in Kansas. And then I can chill. And then I have my late season muzzleloader tag here in Iowa, and I hope to slay again in Iowa. And now what's that mean? Like if I go 4 for 4, holy cow, you'll hear about it. I'll be cheering. Like I'll be going nuts in mm-hmm. Iowa here if I go 4 for 4 this year, but more than likely that's not going to happen. I am, I don't know. But that's the goal, right? Is to go 4 for 4 this year. I have four buck tags, and I'd love to shoot 4 bucks, man.
Absolutely, dude. That sounds like a hell of a lineup for this season. And I mean,
yeah,
I know a lot of guys who would like to be walking around with 4 tags in their pocket for a season, yeah, man. So, dude, that's yep, awesome. But we're coming up on time here, man. But I appreciate the heck out of you coming on the show and just all you do with the Sportsman's Empire and everything. Where can folks go to find more from you, whether it be on social media and the podcast that you got running?
Yeah, so Nine Finger Chronicles, everything. That's my Instagram, that's my Facebook, that's, I don't even know if I have a TikTok, but and then that's the podcast as well. But really what I would like to do is to push people to the Sportsman's Empire, the website, and go to click on network and check out all of the podcasts on the network, because just like yours and all the other ones, man, I'm getting ready to add like 4 new podcasts in the month of July to the network. And I don't want to, maybe I'm biased here, but I would put the content that we create here on the network that you create, I'll put that up against anybody else in the industry that has an outdoor podcast. Everything that we do is high quality. And I'm pretty proud of the fact that I have the other podcasts on the network are doing what they're doing, because everybody on the network is killing it. There's no shit on the network.
Absolutely, dude. Yeah. Well, folks, you hear it every week in the ads, but seriously, do, if you haven't yet, go check out the Sportsman's Empire. Go to the website. That's like Dan said there, because that's where you're going to find everything. But man, this has been an absolute blast. This is going to drop right before the 4th here. So folks, if you're listening to this while you're driving, be smart this week. And happy 4th, everybody. Dan, we'll talk to you soon.
That's all for this week's episode. Thank you so much for tuning in. If you liked this episode, please be sure to subscribe to this podcast wherever you get your podcasts. And while you're at it, if you could leave me a 5-star review, I would appreciate that a ton. You can also follow along with my outdoor adventures on Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube at the Wisconsin Sportsman Pod. That's also the best way to get a hold of me to suggest topics, guests, or questions you'd like me to explore in this show. Big thanks to our awesome partners XOP, Onyx, and Huntworth. Please go support the brands that support this show, and if you're looking for more awesome outdoor content, go check out thesportsmansempire.com, where you'll find a ton of other outdoor podcasts. And until next time, make sure you make the time to get outside and enjoy the incredible natural resources that are ours as Wisconsin sportsmen.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.